Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here every Tuesday live at noon at the beautiful studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames. We gather around our kitchen table. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We get around to all those things, don't we?
Oh, yeah, and we have lots of opinions, as our listeners know.
We do, and you're going to hear some of them, plus some good information, too. So, this past week, we got a bit of rain, which was good for Central Iowa.
Oh, boy, did we.
Oh, actually, we got it in buckets, but we can use it in buckets.
I mean, it's
right
like
now.
Practically moldy everywhere.
See, there's always something to complain about, Donna. Oh, yes, there is. Okay. All right. Well, they also, the country experienced yesterday the total solar eclipse in a small path moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, and people were just excited. People gathered. They traveled so they could stand in the shadow and experience complete darkness for a little while. And we, here in Central Iowa.
Yes. What did we get in Central Iowa?
Well, we heard a lot of hoopla. And yes, we all kind of watched the clock and stood around. But because we were not in the direct path, wasn't quite as dramatic. For people that went to places that were in the path, they actually got a lot of interesting things happening.
Well, which is surprising. We had so much cloud cover.
We had way too much cloud cover here. I did notice it. Yes, it got dark. And it went from being very windy and blustery yesterday morning.
Was that part of it?
It went completely quiet during about a half hour before and a half hour after the total eclipse in this area. I was watching, but I turned on the television and kind of was interested to see how the news networks would cover this sort of thing. And and so I watched it move from Oregon through Utah, and they had reporters along the way in Colorado. And After a while, I just had the sound on. I wasn't really listening. And then I realized their coverage of it sounded ever so much like a game show.
A game show.
Hmm. Well, it did. I mean, when you needed poets for words of awe and wonder, you got, well, Bob, here it comes. There it goes. What do you think? That's what we got. So that was going on quite a bit. That was kind of my soundtrack yesterday. And also the roar of the crowd. People would cheer and yell like they were on Oprah. It was quite nice. So it did sound like a game show on TV.
Oh, us Americans. What are you going to do?
We're so good. So I turned it off and just kind of took a note of what things were happening on my farm. I was...
Right. Lonnie is a little bit out of town. Mm-hmm. So obviously I'm in town and the traffic patterns did not change and it was very hard to notice some of the subtleties. But what did you hear out in the woods?
Well, it got really quiet. And it got not dark, but it got really dusky. My dog went up into the recliner and kind of stuck his nose kind of in the corner. They say that animals sort of are aware. According to the clock, things were at their most eclipsed for this area. The night sounds started.
Then the cicadas started.
The katydids and the tree frogs. And that only happened for about a minute. All the night noises started. The birds were quiet and all the night noises started. It wasn't completely dark, but...
No, it wasn't.
And then that went away. And then my rooster started crowing. But I wouldn't put a lot of credence into my rooster because he's a young guy. He's only about four or five months old now, and he's just learning to crow. So it's a very, whatever it was, he was a little upset. And so there was that in there. And yeah, there it was. So there were some things that happened. And yes, then it did get a little lighter. Then the bird started up again. Yes, it did. My husband and some friends drove south looking for a clear sky and found some in a little north of Kansas City, but they heard through the grapevine, actually through somebody else, that there was a traffic jam from Omaha to Lincoln, Nebraska. It was clear sky.
Okay, right, of course,
and
that would make sense.
And so everybody just kind of stopped and watched. I hope that it's moving
by good.
Now. Yeah, there it was.
That's a good thing when you can get everyone to stop for a couple of moments.
So the next eclipse, as I learned from the television, is going to be in 2024. And we can kind of
Will we see it here or not?
No, it's not going to miss us again. I think it's going to go like from Texas to the northeast this time.
Okay.
Yes, it will.
Say it's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Yes, it's only a canvas sky hanging over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. And without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. And without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Say it's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Yes, the paper moon. Here's a shout-out to the moon and the sun that still keep working hard for us. Thank you, moon and sun and all those things up there. So Donna has had company in her kitchen lately.
Oh, boy.
Today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we'll explore the taste of food and the taste of culture from India.
Yes, I'm going to introduce you to Radhika Boudwar, who's from Pune, who's been staying with me and cooking Indian food for me. Welcome, Radhika.
Thank you, Donna.
And she was telling me this morning, Lana, about what Indians do for eclipses. Sun eclipses, moon eclipses. It's quite a thing. So
traditionally, it's like this. So the belief has always been that the sun is under attack. And the
sun god is being attacked.
And it is the sun god.
And who
so
is
it's
the
not
sun
just
god?
The sun. So Surya, the sun god.
So that's traditional Hindu tradition.
That is traditional Hindu tradition.
Okay.
And even now, a lot of families, traditional families, following very, very traditional traditional ways of worshiping the sun. For them, every time there is an eclipse means that many things come to a standstill. One, during the time of the eclipse, there is no food that is going to be cooked. All the food that has been...
You can eat.
No, you cannot eat.
Oh, it's fasting.
You don't eat at that time. You don't cook any food at that time. In fact, all the food that has been cooked before or leftovers have to be thrown away before the eclipse starts. So, also like basil seeds, we call it tulsi. So, they are scattered all over.
That's what we call it, holy basil.
Holy basil.
Grow some holy basil. You scatter it all over.
So, they're scattered all over. If there is some food which is, you know, dry food, it hasn't been cooked, let's say rice or flour or anything like that, which you're not going to be throwing away. So, the basil leaves are scattered all over that as well. To keep it pure.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, there was this scientific thing as well, I'm sure, because this is a very, very old tradition going back maybe around a few thousand years. So they are mentioned in our ancient texts as well, which are the Vedas. And so the thing was that the bacteria gets that much time to grow that much faster. So even
a pragmatic basis.
Yes.
For it. Yeah.
So even if there is, you know, a very small window when the sun is under eclipse, but even then, so to protect health wise, etc. So there are a whole lot of things that are done, and especially vulnerable, So pregnant women are considered very vulnerable. Children are considered very vulnerable. I was also kind of thinking about it yesterday when I was here watching the eclipse with everybody in our beautiful city, Ames. So I was just thinking that, you know, I think it was a good thing in a way because I saw a couple of kids sneakily not looking through the glasses.
Oh, looking at the sun.
Looking at the eclipse without
the
glasses.
Yes, and I believe I saw in the news last night that our president also looked at the sun without his glasses. And I'm thinking, what kind of example is he setting for our children who we've really had to convince, no, you can't do this?
So now you know if the president of a country can do it.
Yeah.
No, we want to protect our kids over there and pregnant women as well. Mm-hmm. So this tradition has been there for a long time.
And you do it solar eclipse, lunar eclipse?
Both.
Everything.
Both. Because there is, we also, so, you know, so there we there's a lot of work that we put in with astrology. And the moon god also exerts a lot of influence. Mm-hmm. So the sun god in our astro house and the moon god in the astro house, and each one of them brings with it special qualities and influences us in various ways, including our destiny. And both of them have to be protected. Both of them have to be prayed to.
So these are very, very ancient practices. And when you look at it, actually the Christian calendar is based on the astronomy as well. For example, Easter, the date of Easter, which we know changes every year, is based on, what is it, the first Sunday after the first full moon, after the spring equinox. So it's all calculated with the astronomy. So we used to be and continue to be still quite influenced by these things.
Yes, we are all in this together.
That's right. Ancient, ancient, ancient.
So tell us what you've been cooking.
Oh, goodness. Well, I've had a great paratha lesson, and that is spelled P-A-R-A-T-H-A. So the H is silent. Paratha, which is an Indian flatbread. And Radhika says all Indian women make this. And even though she claims she doesn't even cook much, she makes them all from scratch every day.
Yeah, so I have to interject over here before I get lynched by many states of India, which is the southern part of India, who do not actually have parathas. They have, you know, other things like dosas or idlis and others, what we call South Indian food or coastal food.
But they're all flatbreads,
they're
right?
They're all flatbreads.
I mean, India is a very large country, and there are many
varieties,
versions of, depending, just like in this country, where you come from, it depends on what you eat.
Yes. But the traditional paratha, and we say it in various ways depending on, you know, various dialects, how your mother said it, how your grandmother said it, how your neighborhood said it. So we say, parathas, parontas, paranti, paranti, parota. So it's endless.
And those are all the same. This is the flatbread that you taught me.
This
how
is
to
the
make.
Flatbread that we're talking about.
And you're talking about, this is bread that is eaten in
the northern part of India,
right,
yes.
Okay, right. And you're from Pune, which is western part of India.
Yes. So there is a saying that a North Indian can move to any part of the world and any part of India, but the paratha goes with them.
Ah.
So we pretty much carry the paratha everywhere. For example, in the past week, I have made paratha two times. Isn't that right, Donna?
Mm-hmm,
two times?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, however, the real thing is that it is flour, ghee, which is clarified butter, and water and a little bit of salt.
So no leavening at all.
So a lot of times people add more ghee or less ghee to it when they're about to make the dough. But basically it stays the same. And then the variations can go up to maybe a few hundred because there are so many. Every household has its favorite spices.
Oh.
So you mix it at the time of preparing the dough. And also the fillings, if you want to make a stuffed paratha, the fillings are also going to be, what do I say? Like hundreds, they can be just about. And a lot of times, it's just leftovers.
Aha. So, how clever. Yes.
Yes. So it just, you know, and it's a healthy snack, one. The second thing is it's a filling snack. For example, so my husband gets up in the morning and has whatever, his tea and stuff, and then he needs to go for golf, and he knows he's not going to be eating something for the next 3 hours. And he insists, there's always like, we have to have parathas ready because those are filling.
And you make them fresh every morning.
Every morning. I mean, that is the one thing I can close my eyes and make.
We all need something like that.
Yes.
Very good. And does everyone learn? Every woman learns. Women only make them mostly, right?
So now, because the men, especially younger men, are traveling out so much, it's not so easy to get help in the kitchen. They are learning that too. But not as many. I wish there were many more men cooking than there are in India.
We all wish that. So you learned from your mother. Who learned from her mother?
Yes. I learned from my mother, who learned from her mother. And I want to tell you about an interesting thing that my grandmother used to do with parathas. So because travel was very long and not air-conditioned at that time, so what the women did was that instead of using water in the dough to knead the dough, they would add milk. And they would add cream so that it stays soft.
Oh.
And those parathas would actually last maybe something like a week.
Oh, my.
And there were special vegetables prepared in a certain manner, which also lasted a long time. So the combination of both of them meant that whoever it was that is traveling is not going to go out of food at all for those many days. And so some of the things that we use as stuffings would be potatoes. Cauliflower is very popular as well because it is available a lot of the year. We have paneer. Like, my husband is,
okay,
he wants paneer parathas.
Paneer is a simple cheese that everyone in India, and it's usually, we have to talk about dairy too. A lot of the dairy, particularly in the north at least, is made from buffalo milk.
From buffalo milk, yes.
Which I love.
Oh.
It tastes a lot like a very nice, rich milk. A subtle nutty quality.
It has a subtle nutty quality. And it has, so depending on the feed that is given to the cow or the buffalo or the cattle that we're having milk. Let's talk about the buffalo. So the buffalo feed will determine how rich the cream is that is going to be there on the top.
Just like a cow, right?
Like a
cow. Or
cows.
A goat. Yeah, right.
Could you talk a little bit about why is ghee different from butter and how one makes ghee?
Okay. So I'm going to talk about how it is made in my home. The difference really is that ghee is more clarified than butter. So the butter is then put to boil. So we make the butter, churn out the butter from the
making their own butter.
So the cream is called malai. Mm. Let me give you the whole thing right from start.
Wait. What do you use to churn your own butter?
Yes, because there is not that much of cream or malai, so you can even do it with a whisk. But I know in my mother-in-law's home when I got married, because there were liters and liters of milk. In fact, I had never seen that much milk at one place together.
So what do you use to make your butter?
So I use maybe a whisk because there is not that much of cream collected together. So basically this is how the cream is collected. We get the milk, we boil the milk.
Where do you get the milk?
Oh, yeah. So there are various places to get the milk. There would be directly from farmers who keep buffaloes or cows. Then there would be collection points, and they often put it in plastic bags. And that is what...
Bags.
Plastic bags, which are sealed. And so that is what most of urban India is using. There would also be Tetra Paks available, pretty much like here. And
so you would go to a grocery store and buy a bag of milk?
We would go to a grocery store and buy a bag of milk, but also, we would ask them to deliver it at home.
Oh, they still deliver. How fabulous.
Oh, yes. Everything is delivered.
Ha-ha. Well, we're trying to get back to that here with Amazon.
It's going to save you all so much of time. So we have, like, instructions for the whole month. Every day, X amount of milk to be delivered.
You get a delivery of fresh milk.
Yes. So many of us are so spoiled about milk and milk products, we will not use the milk products from the day before, especially curd, which is often
called... Curd is yogurt.
Yes. And a curd has to be fresh. We make our own curd. Most of us make our own curd or set our own curd. Like
you
we
make
say.
It every day, your own yogurt.
Almost every day. We set our own yogurt almost
okay,
every
so
day.
Okay, so what time does the milk arrive? You get up, is it, where is it?
So if you're going to buy it, a plastic bag kind of a thing, you can go and buy it anytime. But again, electricity goes in India. You guys don't have any of those things happening here. You have electricity all the time. So because electricity may not be there, you don't want the milk which goes stale in the heat, even though if it is in a refrigerator. So each one of us is trying to get up in the morning and get it home as soon as possible and put the milk to boil, which means...
Okay, this is amazing. So they buy the milk in the plastic bag, and then they take it home and pasteurize it themselves.
Yes.
By boiling it for...
So we're boiling it, and when it comes to a boil...
Are we talking about a quart, or how much milk do you buy every day for you
see.
And your husband?
Let's see. We two of us right now, so it would be about maybe 2 liters, because one would be for the curd or the yogurt.
Ah, okay. So that's about a half gallon, more or less.
Okay. Yeah. And so once it comes to boil, I let it boil. For
okay, so it comes with the cream on it.
It comes with the cream on it, but you can do it. You can buy it whichever way you want. You get half-toned milk. You get
half-toned.
Full,
oh boy.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
You get full-fat milk.
Mm-hmm.
So the days that I have to set the yogurt, I will only buy the full-fat or full-cream milk because the yogurt sets thicker. It's tastier as well. And otherwise, maybe half-toned. And the days that I know that I'm going to be making or taking the cream off the milk, again, it will have to be full-fat milk. And so you boil the milk, you let it cool, you put it in the refrigerator, and then the cream is thickened on top.
Okay, right. So the cream will rise to the top. And
thickens.
You just spoon the cream off?
Yes,
if you
just
want
spoon it.
It
off. And you collect it in one container every day for maybe 3 or 4 days. And then you just churn it into butter.
And you're churning it just by hand with a whisk?
Yes, because it's not that much.
Okay, and this is a woman who says she doesn't cook. Already this is more than most Americans would even imagine.
And then is the next process in case we want to make ghee. And that is then put into a thick-bottomed container because that can,
you know. Right, you don't want to burn it.
You don't want to burn it. So this is what I am not particularly fond of doing, and my husband, because he comes from a family. Yes, I don't like the smell too much personally, but most of India loves it.
Yeah, right. I like it.
My husband loves it as well. And he's grown up with a lot of milk around him, and I have not grown up with a lot of milk and ghee.
He comes from a farming family.
Yes, he does. Yes. And so he helps me with that, which is not what many men do because it's a tedious kind of a thing. So whatever the impurities are, they continue rising to the top.
So, yes, what are called impurities are the milk solids.
Yes.
So ghee is basically a process of melting the milk fat or the cream or the butter to the point where the solids separate from the oil. So ghee is pure butter fat with all of the milk solids removed.
Yes, and we do that with hand, literally. So as it keeps coming up, with a spoon we keep taking it out.
Taking the milk solids out.
Yes.
Yes.
Until it's absolutely clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice to make it at home because it does not have a smell.
Ah.
So.
But it has a very nice flavor.
Yes, it has a very nice flavor. And we use it for a lot of our foods. And coming back to the parathas, yes, a lot of parathas are still cooked in desi ghee or clarified butter,
it's
called.
Very, very good.
Yes.
We'll talk more about parathas. This is KHOI, and this is Adana Lana Kitchen. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We are talking about ghee. We are talking about parathas.
Yes, so we have my Indian paratha expert here, Radhika, and she made them for me the other day. So a paratha is, it's P-A-R-A-T-H-A, silent H. It is a flatbread, unleavened, and it is rolled with oil. So it kind of is from the tradition of, croissants are made the same way, where you roll the oil into the dough.
Ah.
Many cultures have that kind of, what's the Middle Eastern, this baklava, those kinds of doughs are layers of flour and butter, and they you keep rolling so that when you apply the heat, they kind of rise up. So we actually made them with olive oil instead of ghee the other day. So we're going to make them once more on Friday, and I want to have them made with ghee so I have the total experience. So Radhika and I are going to walk you through how she does this, but I want to mention that I found a very good, if you want to look it up online to kind of see pictures and things, it's called vegrecipesofindia.com. So they had a good recipe for a plain paratha. So the first thing is the kind of flour. You use a whole wheat flour, right?
We want to use, most of us want to use a whole wheat flour. A little bit of difference between what I used at your place the other day and what we mostly get in our grocery stores over there is yours had a lot of bran. If I'm using the correct word, is
yes,
that bran?
Yes.
Yes. So,
well, and there's the other thing. What we were using was a whole wheat pastry flour. So pastry flour is a soft winter wheat. It was not a whole wheat bread flour because those are hard wheats and they have even more bran.
Yes. So whenever a flour has more bran, it soaks up more oil when we're making parathas. So you have to hit that sweet spot where it's not going to take that much of time to cook. It's not going to absorb so much of oil and yet stays very tasty and healthy.
So here, Names, the flour mixture that we've arrived at, which we think is successful, is we got it from Wheatsfield, or it's the Early Morning Harvest brand, which is the Iowa wheat, which is grown here, which is ground here. And we used a mixture of Early Morning Harvest, half whole wheat pastry flour and half of their unbleached flour. And that seems to so basically she puts like 2 cups of this flour mix and then a little bit of oil or ghee, a teaspoon or so, half teaspoon of salt, and then she starts mixing the water into it with her hands.
How do you tell? So I think you just get to reach that after you've tried it a few times. It's very hard to say because depending on the flour.
Yeah, how much water
You cannot decide on the water. But at the end of it, when you've kneaded the dough, it should not be hard, but it should not be so soft that you cannot roll it out.
Right, it goes into a nice little ball.
It needs to go into a nice little ball in your palm, one. The second thing is try it out on wherever you're going to be rolling it out because it should be able to take a round shape.
Right. If it's too hard, it won't roll. That means you need more water. If it's too soft, of course, it's going to stick to your rolling pin.
Yes, and that's the easier thing to do. And that's the reason a lot of us add a little bit of oil as well, because then it does not stick to many things. So this rolling it out to a...
And the ball is, what do you think, maybe 2 inches in diameter max.
Yes. So so it also depends on what kind of parathas you're making. So, for example, if you're going to stuff them with some vegetables or maybe paneer, which is cottage cheese, or any kind of stuffing, then you want it to be a little thicker because it could break when you're rolling it out.
Now, did you put things into the dough the other night? You did. You put cilantro leaves. What else did you put
yes.
into
so
the
dough? Yes, so I put coriander leaves. I put onions.
Oh, right. Chopped.
Chopped onions.
Raw onions.
Yes.
Right?
I also put a little bit of garlic because I know that your family
loves garlic.
Loves garlic. So I thought, let me put some of that.
Very finely. Raw garlic went into the dough.
A little bit of salt, which is something that we do always. Mm-hmm. A little bit of salt goes into that. Mm-hmm. And then when you're rolling them out, okay, so I have to share this. I was like the worst roller of chapatis or parathas ever. So when I stayed with my parents before I got married, so I did not do too much of chapati or paratha making. And I would just look and say, huh, I'm going to be able to do it when I have to do it. And my mother would say, they are going to send you back. Now, they is something which what Indian mothers say very often. That would mean all the in-laws together, the husband, his family, extended family.
Oh, they would send you back.
Total shame, yes. And so I got married thinking, I'm going to be making lovely parathas for the new husband. And when I stepped in to make the parathas, it went into crazy shapes. First, I could not make the dough. It was either too runny or too hard.
What did you call your mother?
I did not, because she would have said, I told you. I figured it out somehow after many tries, but I was married to a nice guy because he said, I don't mind odd-shaped parathas. I don't mind odd-shaped rotis or chapatis.
Well, so then you knew you were off to a good marriage, okay.
Yes. I would stay with him just for this.
So they come out, the ones she's making now, after many years of practice, right?
Oh, yes.
How many years have you been married?
32.
Yeah, okay. Lots of practice, all right? 32 years every day making parathas, okay?
Well, I say every day, but that means like a lot of days in a month. Yes.
Yeah, okay. So they come out kind of like a triangle because what she does is so she's mixed the water and the flour and whatever condiments you want to put into it. And then you let it rest a little bit and you make these little balls. Then you take the little ball and, you know, just like rolling out a pie dough, you put it on the wooden surface or the, and you put a little flour so it doesn't stick?
Yes.
Okay. Just like making a pie dough or a biscuit dough. And then she rolls it out. Then she puts the oil, which we actually used olive oil, but we're going to try it again with ghee, which is traditional. Just a little bit, enough to moisten it. Then she folds it in half. Then she puts a little more ghee on it. Then she folds it in quarters. So, in fact, you have roughly a triangle with one round edge. Then she rolls it.
Yes. So that's my favorite way of doing it. I think so. Everybody does it differently. Mostly people would just roll it in a round like a pie. Mm-hmm. I think I started doing it because those layers are tasty.
Right. You get a little bit of oil rolled into the wheat in layers.
It is tasty. And the second thing is when I was learning how to, right at the start, when I was learning how to make parathas, you know, a triangle cannot go very wrong. A circle? that's a different thing.
Very good.
So, and you roll them until they're, what do you think? Maybe an eighth of an inch to a quarter maximum.
Yes.
Thin, and they're small. They come out maybe 4 to 5 inches maximum.
That is right, yes. So the thickness of the parathas will also be, you know, so is somebody going to be doing a lot of physical work that day? So people who do a lot of physical work.
More work, you get fatter parathas.
Yes, because then, you know, more carbs.
Yeah.
Yes?
Oh, okay.
So more carbs. And then maybe so also people, you know, in the rural areas who are working in the farms or the fields, typically their parathas are a lot larger than ours from the cities. So they also have more ghee if they can afford it. Now, ghee is not so, you know, it costs a lot in India now.
Right.
So if not ghee, some kind of oil, so that it becomes a substantial food. Mm-hmm. And maybe they would eat it with some pickle sitting in the farm.
Okay, pickle is not what we call a pickle. A pickle is like mango chutney, basically.
Yes, it's
kind
more
of like that.
More chutney than what you would call pickle.
Right.
And
do you buy those or do you make those?
I would love to say we make those, but now many of us are buying them.
Okay. So this morning I took Radhika over to our international grocery store, Pamel, because I wanted her to see what kinds of products were available here. And I want your opinion of in a town of more or less 50,000 people, and we have this store, how do you think the product range is for international people living here?
So for the Indian section, I have to say it was well-stocked.
Ha-ha!
It was, really. I mean, as an Indian person here, I would find almost everything that I would need, including pickles, like we call pickles, including three or four kind of flowers. I saw desi ghee there. I saw a couple of other kind of oils. There was semolina, out of which we make, you know, like sweets, like suji halwa, which we're going to be making one of these days.
So suji halwa is, I've made it with, you basically take cream of wheat because that's what suji halwa.
So it's very sweet, like the name that you call it here.
It's cream a dessert.
Yes.
So you take cream of wheat, you make it really thick.
Cream of wheat.
Then you add butter and sugar and seasonings?
Add ghee. There would not be any butter in
it. Okay.
Yes.
And sugar. And what spices would you use?
So cardamom, mm-hmm. always. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we add some things like nutmeg as well, but mm-hmm. not everybody does that.
And then do you put nuts in it or
yes,
not?
Yes, lots of dry fruit, lots of nuts.
Like what kinds of dried fruit?
So it would mean
cashews are common, right?
Cashews and
right?
almonds mm-hmm. and pistachios.
Pistachios,
yes. Walnuts.
Oh, wow.
Yes. In fact, so we cut them into really tiny bits and cover the top of it. And that's how it is served.
Oh, so finely chopped and sprinkled on top.
On top of it.
And this is a very common dessert, even if you go to like a big festival, they often have suji halwa.
Our temples also serve it
yes.
as the prasad
or the gift from the temple.
The gift from the gods, which comes yes. back to you. Mm-hmm. So yeah. that too is a halwa. And
not like Middle Eastern halwa.
No, not like that.
No,
yes.
There's no sesame in it.
Yes.
But it is kind of the same word.
Oh, yes.
Very good.
It comes okay. from there. Yes.
Yes, it's yummy.
I have another question about parathas. One has this kind of
folding.
How do you cook it?
Oh, why we didn't get to that point.
You have to finish that recipe.
So, all right. So she's folded them and rolled them and they make this nice little triangle. So I just happened to have, when she arrived, I pulled out my Indian chapati making pan.
I have to stop her here and tell you that I have never seen the kind of contraptions that I've seen in Donna's kitchen ever in my life. I have to say it's definitely not an average American kitchen.
No.
What's in your kitchen? Obviously, you have a refrigerator, you have a stove.
Yes, I have a stove. I have a microwave, which you don't keep. And
but that's not an average American kitchen, right?
Yes.
Most Americans have microwaves.
Yes, so that's why that's the first thing I noticed. I said, So when Donna says organic, she takes it to another level altogether. And that's one thing I'm going away with. Because every time I've visited here before, I haven't really realized, organic from inorganic. And Donna has been the bestest teacher there can be for that.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. And I think I have really learned how to use the produce of the land to make just about everything at home. And I've seen her work with peaches and tomatoes of different kinds.
Yes, she's been here for the best season.
And peppers of all kinds. And I just see her work so hard on them and bottle them. And it's amazing to take them out of the refrigerator or her pantry and eat them up. Yes,
that's
and
very
you know,
good.
It's, you know, you're
good.
Eating healthy.
You've come the best time of the year, I must say. So my chapati pan. Do you have a pan like that in your kitchen?
Yes.
And
actually,
is that what you cook on?
Exactly like that.
Well, only I'm sure hers is much more well-seasoned because mine, they're made, it's what it is, it's a round, kind of slightly curved, almost like a griddle, and it's maybe 6 inches in diameter with a long wooden handle.
Like a wok.
Like a tiny flattish.
Right. Oh, so then you cook it on a flame.
You put that, and it's cast iron, and mine has not been used enough to have the perfect seasoning.
So the first thing I had to do was I had to oil her pan.
She had to season my chapati pan.
Yes, I seasoned her chapati pan because I knew my Parathas are going to be stuck, and I will not look like an expert.
I might have had a chapati pan, but I didn't have a really well-seasoned one.
Well,
so she's fixed it. We're putting some miles on that chapati
yes,
pan.
Yes, we are.
Oh, that's very good.
We
that's
could. Good. Now, for you who want to make parathas and do not have a chapati pan, you can probably use a good cast iron skillet.
Yes, that would do absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you fry it over or put it on a flame and flip it or?
Yes.
Okay, so you put it on the flame. You've already added
a little. You heat the pan up, right?
Yes, you heat the pan. You add a little bit of oil or butter to it already. Mm-hmm. You put this.
The pan. You slightly.
Yes.
You slightly oil the pan, like as if you were making pancakes or something. Not,
exactly.
It's not frying.
Exactly.
But it has a little bit of oil in it.
Absolutely. And then you put it on there, and maybe in about half a minute or to a minute, depending on how long you think the flour is going to be starting to cook, you flip it the other side.
Very good.
And each time you flip it, you add desi ghee or whatever the oil of your choice
another slight layer of oil every time you flip it.
Ah, very good. A paratha.
And she served it. We have to finish this part. So she had also made a potato dish. What would you call the potato dish?
So that would be aloo ki sabzi. Aloo is potato and sabzi is vegetable.
Okay, so it had... What did it have in it?
Okay, so
she had the potatoes cooked already, and she fried them with onions, peppers.
Yes, yes.
And then what were the spices?
So the spices were coriander seeds, for one.
Ground.
There was also cumin.
Whole seed.
Mm-hmm. And there was onion to that.
And you start by frying the spices first.
We do the spices, then we add the onion and peppers,
uh-huh.
and then we add the potatoes.
Right.
And all the other masalas, the garam masala.
So
garam
masala
is hot.
Means spice mixture. And I have to tell you, she arrived with her own packages of spice mixtures. Lots of them.
Truly prepared.
Absolutely.
Delicious. There are a lot of good tastes out here. Take a little time for a poem here. I talked, on a past Donald on a Kitchen Show, I talked to Geetha Iyer. She's a graduate of the MFA program in creative writing and environment at ISU.
I have to say one thing.
What?
The reason Radhika is here is because her daughter, Kartika, has come to go to school in that same program. So, of course, a good Indian mother, she has to come first and have a short visit and check out everything so that she knows where her daughter's going.
Honestly, I don't think any Indian kid is going to be calling that good.
But as a grandmother, I have to say, when Kartika wrote and said, well, my mother's coming for a little while, I completely understood.
I'm so glad you understood, Donna, because... it's really sweet of her to let me come like this let me stay. But, you know, the other day, just yesterday, a couple of your friends were saying to me, why don't you stay another month and watch the football?
Oh, that's important.
And
that's important.
I said, you know what? My daughter is going to say, hello, you stay here and do this program. I'm going home.
Yes. That's true.
So
that's
Lana has a poem from a friend of hers who also did the creative writing and the environment program at ISU.
Okay, let's hear about Geetha Iyer's food journey. Tell me about your writing.
Okay, so I'm primarily a fiction writer. I tend to focus on short fiction, but I also write nonfiction and poetry. And I have a background in the natural sciences, so a lot of my writing sort of taps into, sort of things that I've read about in, scientific texts, things I learned in biology classes, things that sort of fascinate me. And so that's sort of like where I'm inspired and what I like to write about. And so I do that sort of work.
Mm-hmm. Do you have something to share with us today?
Yes, I do. I have a poem here. It's actually an excerpt from a much longer poem that's about sort of my connection to my food history, because I'm from the south of India, and so I was thinking a lot about sort of the kind of foods that we make, how we learn to make them, and also about sort of like the languages, particularly my mother tongue, Tamil. It's a South Indian language from Chennai, which used to be called Madras when I was growing up. And so sort of like in learning how to make dishes from my family history, I was also sort of tapping into the language in which those dishes were conveyed to me, and sort of, you know, relearning my language in a way, because most of what I do is speak in English, but I miss, you know, sort of thinking and speaking in Tamil as well. And so this is a part of that poem. The poem's called Mapping the Tongue. It was published in the Mid-American Review, and the part that I'm going to read to you is part six. I guess I might have to describe why there are six parts. The poem is organized around how South Indians sort of classify tastes. Like, you commonly think of tastes as sort of, you know, sweet, sour, salty, spicy, and maybe umami for some people here, for like savoriness. So there are six tastes in India, in the way that we classify them. We have bitterness, sweetness, sourness, saltiness, spiciness, and something that's harder to describe, astringency, sort of, you know, dryness. And so the part of the poem that I'm going to read to you is about dryness. There are a couple of words in there that are in Tamil, and one of them is Amamma, which is my grandmother. So this is a poem that's about her and some of the stuff that I learned from her. So part six. Thorpe, that which remains. Next time you bite into a still raw banana, consider how its meat clings like drying glue to each pink bud of flesh on your tongue. Or drink from that forgotten cup of black tea left by the stovetop, the wick of the thread sprouting from the teabag, now tanned and hardened, the liquid like bone meal, a rasp inside your mouth. Or go to Madras, where they harvest heavy lobes of purple-red banana hearts. Shuck the spiraled sepals. Each sheath unveils banana flowers, pale as baby fingers. Slice them away from the stem. Dice the flowers. Let the pieces soak in a large orange plastic bowl filled with water from the tap. Remember, Amamma had a trick for making precious little stretch, curried banana flowers with ground lentils for bulk. She said to eat slowly, parting meat from grit. Even today, the memory lingers. Mother tongue, like after apples, filming the teeth.
That was a poem by Geeta Iyer. And it's about food. It's about taste. It's about her growing up in India.
It's about her grandmother.
You're listening to KHOI. This is Donna Lana Kitchen. Find out more about this show and this radio station at khoifm.org.
So we're talking a little bit with Radhika Boudoir today, and we talked about paratas, but we haven't talked about chai yet. So chai is the most everybody, even Americans, I think, know about chai. So it's Indian spiced tea made with milk, and Radhika came with her own chai seasoning.
So home is where
The chai is.
And the bestest chai is your own chai.
And her chai is different from any. Normally, the classical chai is usually ginger, cloves, cardamom, black pepper, and then sugar, black tea, and plenty of milk. But she doesn't put cardamom in hers. What do you put in your own chai mix?
So I put fennel seeds instead.
Ha-ha!
And a lot of it also has to do with the kind of place that you're living in weather-wise. So in Ayurveda, a lot of us do not, we don't follow Ayurveda as such, but we grew up learning from our grandmothers that the heart
They're sort of medical, physical.
Yes, the traditional.
Yes.
The traditional
Indian medicine.
Yes, and that is connected to food in the sense that we believe that every food has either a cold essence or a hot one. So if you live in a place that is really warm, or if the weather is warm, you do not eat foods, or you try not to eat foods with a warm heart or a hot heart.
Oh, so you want to use your food to cool yourself.
Yes. So because I live in a town which is which is really never very cold. I try my best to put Pune. So I try, and it's now called Pune. So I try my best to use fennel seeds because fennel seeds are cooling.
Ah.
So even though chai may be hot, the heart of it may
hot
be hot.
Temperature,
but,
right.
Yes, but then you're always, you know, the cooling down stays good because you have fennel seeds in there.
Well, and I have to say, since she's been at my house, there's always a pan on the stove that has some fresh grated ginger in it. And a few other things, mysterious
yes, so
things.
Cinnamon,
what are they?
So that would be cinnamon. That would be the masala, the chai masala,
the
or the chai spices I brought with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is constantly there because the more you leave it in water, it steeps more.
Aha, of course.
And
okay.
Then it saves time when I'm making it. But also,
yes, she's always at any instant ready to offer anyone who comes a cup of chai.
Yes, I plan to leave my chai mark.
You should. Chai was something that I discovered. I have one of my fondest memories in 1987, way back when I traveled with a friend in India, and I traveled the trains, and it was an amazing experience.
Oh,
from
yes.
From a kid.
Always chai available.
From a kid from the Midwest, I learned a lot. And one thing I remember is pulling into a station and hearing the tiwalas, the
chai
tea
wala,
sellers.
Yeah.
And the
you drop the window open, and
chai,
they come running
chai,
up to you
chai.
With a glass of hot chai to drink.
Chai,
yes.
But just the sound of chai, that sticks with me, and it's a wonderful memory.
And it's chai has become very popularized in this country in the last, I don't know what, 10 or 15 years or something, which is delightful to see.
Yes, so I cannot imagine waking up and not getting chai. You know, and I wasn't sure what Donna's kitchen's going to be like, and, you know. And so I said, oh, let me take my chai masala with me.
Well, yes, because we are definitely a coffee culture here, even though more and more people are drinking tea.
And so I have never really missed home at all because, of course, the hospitality, Donna's hospitality and her generosity, I have to say. And
oh, thank you.
Yes, I say that all the time. And then there is the masala chai on the pot always.
Yes, oh, we've had some very good international cooking adventures right here in Ames.
Thank you, Radhika. It's been wonderful to have you here on the Donalana Kitchen. We talked about chai. We talked about ghee. We talked about
paratas,
which can be pronounced many different ways. And we got a little bit of the eclipse into. Yes, we did. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
There are a few upcoming things happening here. Let's see. This weekend, go to the local foods potluck at
that's coming up.
Brookside Field. Park Maple Shelter here in Ames. The local food co-op is having a local foods potluck. Find out more at
Which day of the week is that on?
That is Saturday, August 26th.
Okay.
Also on Saturday, August 26th is the first series of Central Iowa Barn Dances. You can go to centraliowabarndance.org. It's dancing, it's
that.
Barns, it's right up my alley. And farther along, September 8th, there is a Sustainable Agriculture Student Association Harvest Festival at Alluvial Brewing Company.
I've promised to cook for them.
You've been listening to The Donalana Kitchen. We've had music by the Barn Owl Band, by Patty Casey. We'll go out with some Barn Owl Band music. The Barn Owl Band music here, it's the Star of Munster. Yes, it will. For more information about the Barn Dance, go to centraliowabarndance.org. You can listen to the Donalana Kitchen Tuesday at noon or 7 p.m. in the evening on Tuesday, or any time by going to that website, khoifm.org. And you can download, you can listen on your device. Yes, you can. Support this fine community radio station. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.